From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Jeannie Yandel. This is The Record. Summer in the Puget Sound region is glorious. The sun comes out early and doesn't set until around 9 p.m. So I'm about to do something cruel. I'm about to take you into the darkness. First, winter in Seattle. During the winter, between sunrise and sunset, Seattle generally experiences only about 8 hours of light per 24-hour cycle. That's a lot of darkness. But according to Paul Bogard, it's not enough, and it's not the right kind, more importantly. Paul Bogard is the author of the book The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in an Age of Artificial Light. Thank you for coming in and talking with me.
It's great to be here.
So, why does darkness matter?
Darkness matters for so many reasons. But I guess I would just start by saying, you know, when you think about life on Earth and how life evolved, it evolved with bright days. We certainly need sunlight. We need that natural light. But it also evolved with dark nights. And we need that natural darkness as much as we need the light. So you see that in certainly environmental aspects. We have so many nocturnal and crepuscular creatures, those creatures that are mostly active at dawn and dusk. And we see that in the human body, which has been has evolved to respond to light and darkness. And really, for optimal health, we're finding studies are showing us more and more and more that we really need darkness to be as healthy as we want to be.
I'm talking with Paul Bogard. He's the author of the book The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in an Age of Artificial Light. And we're talking about what it means to be always exposed to artificial light, how that can affect our health, how that can affect other things. And one of the things that you looked at in your book was how exposure to artificial light can affect our sleeping habits over time. And I guess the spoiler alert is it's not really good for our sleeping habits. What did you find about the impact of light on sleeping?
Well, bottom line is that light at night disrupts our sleep. And sleep disorders are tied to every major disease that we're dealing with in the Western world right now: diabetes, cancer, obesity, you name it. Not getting enough sleep, or as one of the guys I talked to at Harvard calls it, short sleep. That is, we don't get enough sleep. And he said, you know, a big reason for this short sleep is long light. That is, that we are in light all day long, even in the winter. You know, if we're inside, we're subjected to light. And then we go home, we're in light, and we're just in light all the way up to the point that we, some of us at least, turn off the light to go to sleep. And then sometimes we even leave the lights on in our bedroom, or we have light coming in from the streets. And so this long light is getting in the way of our sleep and really having serious health effects.
Well, so one obvious thing to do about that is to turn off the lights when you go to bed, maybe spend time without the lights on in your house before you go to sleep. But what can you do about the light coming in from the outside?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, first of all, you know, if you're not sleeping in total darkness, that everyone I talked to, everyone who's studying this issue said sleep in the dark. That's what we've evolved to do. That's what we ought to be doing. So that's step one. You can put curtains up. You know, I sleep, as a lot of Americans do, in a house that has a street light right outside the window. And I have to put up light blocking curtains to block that out. But you know, that puts the responsibility on us, and it doesn't get at the heart of the real problem, I don't think, which is that in this country and really all over the world, in major cities and major urban areas, we are just using way too much light. And so there's no reason why we have to have all this light right outside our windows, kind of, and putting the onus on the people inside to block the light.
You also looked at the connection between artificial light and cancer. What's the connection there?
Well, the connection there is that light at night disrupts the production of the hormone melatonin. Melatonin is only produced in our bodies in darkness. It's sometimes referred to as the darkness hormone. And what studies are showing is that a lack of melatonin in our bloodstream is linked to an increased risk for especially breast and prostate cancer. So the World Health Organization, for example, now calls working the night shift a probable carcinogen. And it's primarily because of this connection between the disruption of the production of the hormone melatonin and the confusing of our circadian rhythms. That's another part of it, too.
I'm talking with Paul Bogard, who's the author of the book, The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in an Age of Artificial Light. He looked at the connection between exposure to artificial light and health issues, cancer, sleep disorders. And he also looked at why it's so difficult to find true darkness in the United States. And that's the thing that I'm wondering about next. Why is it so hard to find true darkness in our country?
Because there's light everywhere. Anywhere there are people, there is light. We bring our electric light and increasingly our electronic light everywhere we go. And so, you know, people will move out to the country because they want to live in the country, and they bring the light that they're used to from the city or the suburb. So it's really spreading everywhere. And that's one of the reasons why I say it's so important for us to become aware of this and to start to reduce our light where we live and to protect those areas that are still dark. Because I think that it's not enough to just say, oh, well, you know, if you want darkness, you know, drive out into the country or go somewhere remote, because eventually those places will have light as well.
Hmm. Well, I have to ask, you say there's light everywhere and that's why it's so hard to find darkness. Why did you start your book in Las Vegas then? I've never even been to Las Vegas, and all I can think of when I think of Las Vegas is lights.
Yeah, I hadn't been there either before I wrote the book. And as I describe in the opening pages, the sensation for me of standing on the Las Vegas Strip is that you're just sort of bathing in light. Like, it's all over your body. It's just kind of plastered to you. And, you know, when I talk to the guys at NOAA who take the photographs of the Earth at night, they told me that the Las Vegas Strip is the brightest pixel of any photograph they've taken in the world. So there are a lot of cities that are actually brighter than Las Vegas just because they're bigger and there's more light there. But the Strip is really the brightest place you can go.
Well, and one of the places on the Strip that you describe in your book is the Luxor Casino, which is this huge pyramid. And there's this beam of light that comes out of the top of the casino. And you talk about seeing bats and birds swirling in that beam of light. They're there to gorge on the moths that are attracted to that huge beam of light, which makes me think of another quintessential Las Vegas thing, which is an all-you-can-eat buffet. Yet, you actually say that that's problematic. It's a problem to have a huge beam of light that bats and birds can use to eat all the moths that they want. What's the problem there?
Yeah, there's actually been a study that has shown that the amount of energy that the bats fly into to feed at this buffet, as we describe it, but they fly from roosts that the distances that they fly in, they feed, and they fly back. And by the time they get back to feed their young, they've used up all that energy. So it's basically defeats the purpose of them flying in there. And what that light shows is kind of an extreme example of a situation that lots of us all over the country have seen, which is that street light or that sign from a store or something in the summer that attracts all these insects, moths and other nocturnal insects. And we just think, well, that's just, you know, wow, look at all the bugs. But actually what's happening there is those lights are acting like a vacuum in the ecosystem. They're just sucking those insects out of the darkness that are they're attracted to the light. And for a while, it's a buffet for the birds and the bats and that kind of thing. But after a while, it kind of that buffet kind of dries up and there's nothing there. And so the lights have kind of, we like to say, they've kind of hoovered the protein out of the ecosystem.
So what are the long-term consequences of that? Of that protein being, to use your phrase, hoovered out of the ecosystem?
Well, there are serious long-term consequences because really what's happening is that it's affecting the entire food chain. So up and down the food chain, you know, one thing eats one thing and then the other thing eats that thing and up and down. And so if you have a break in that food chain, if you've taken out sort of the base level of protein, you're going to have ramifications up and down. And so those, you know, the birds that are so important to us that we love and the bats that are really important to us, I could talk for a long time about how fascinating and important bats are. They start to suffer because their primary source of food has suffered because of our lights.
What would you like to see happen in this country when it comes to artificial light?
Well, the big first step, I think, is for folks to just become aware of it. Most of us, or, you know, if you're, I like to say, sort of under the age of 50 or even 40, you've just grown up most likely swamped in light. You just don't know any different. So the first part is to understand that, for example, parking lots and gas stations are lit about 10 times as brightly as they were just 20 years ago. We've had this sort of huge growth in light, and we just think it's normal. Beyond that sense of just, you know, becoming aware of, look at all the light, there's all this light around us, we can start doing things like making sure that all the lights that we have are focused downward. So we stop lighting up the sky, for example. That is not doing anybody any good to have lights going up into the sky, or that we don't light up our neighbor's bedroom. That happens a lot. You can walk through any neighborhood in the U.S. and you can see one neighbor lighting up the interior of another of their neighbor's house. Because this is just sort of thoughtless, irresponsible, wasted light shining in all directions. So I'd like to see lighting that's directed downward. And I think it's important to say that, you know, neither I or the people that I talk to in the book are saying, let's not have any light. You know, let's do away with light. We're going to have light. I think what we're trying to say is, let's use light thoughtfully, responsibly, even beautifully. I mean, that's one of the great experiences I have in the book is when I go to Paris and I just spend time walking around with the man who's in charge of essentially trying to make Paris beautiful at night with the lighting. And it's, let me tell you, he's not just blasting light all over the place like we are in most cities. He's being very careful about what he lights and how he lights and where he lights.
That's Paul Bogard, the author of The End of Night, Searching for Natural Darkness in the Age of Artificial Light. He spoke to The Record's Jeannie Yandel. We've been asking you about some of the darkest nights that you've seen.
I've always been a city girl, but I was camping in Southern Oregon and came back to the campsite at night, looked up at the sky, and said, oh, that's why they call it the Milky Way. I had never seen the Milky Way before.
While stationed on an icebreaker in the U.S. Coast Guard, I was transiting from Seattle to Antarctica. Going across the equator one night, we had a moonless night, and I could see so many stars that evening. It was unbelievable. Stars that I had never knew existed in regular land areas where you would see normal nightlight underway. It was fantastic.
That was Chris and Antoinette, both of Seattle, with their memories of dark nights. Email us with your memories of the darkest night you've ever seen and where you were at the time. Our email address is record@kuow.org.